name is Jackie Lamport. Today is Thursday, November 25th. Welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast. Today on the show.
It's not the citizen's responsibility to adjust the kind of care they look for because the system is disorganized.
We get a better sense of the role walk-in clinics play in our healthcare system and why they're becoming increasingly inaccessible. Today's Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by EvolveMedical.co. Evolve is here to empower you to better manage blood sugar using the latest wearable technology combined with one-on-one personalized medical care and health coaching. Take their medically supervised 28-day group challenge. Space is limited. Sign up today at EvolveMedical.co. Really quick, if you enjoyed the podcast and you want to know, hey, how can I support this? Well, the best thing that you can do is rate and review on the app that you're listening to right now if it allows it. And you can also help out Capital Daily as a whole by checking out our membership opportunity at capitaldaily.ca/member. I do not have a family doctor. I moved here from out of the province about a year ago now, and I haven't been able to get one. That's a story that a lot of people have experienced, and we've discussed it in previous episodes. Like everyone who has not been able to get a family doctor, I have relied on the healthcare apps if I needed something or was paranoid about a random symptom, which, full disclosure, happens more often than it should. But what these apps can offer only goes so far. So the next option, or what used to be the go-to option, is walk-in clinics. This is something that I was trying to find in the area, and I quickly realized it's not an easy thing to do. In Canada, we like to talk about how great our healthcare system is because we don't pay for it out of pocket, we pay for it with our taxes. But how can something like that be great if it's not accessible? The first issue with walk-ins is, of course, the unpredictable wait times. And unfortunately for us islanders, we're in a particularly bad area for this. In 2019, just before the pandemic hit, British Columbia had the honor of holding the top three places with the longest walk-in clinic wait times across all provinces. What's more, those top three towns are all on the island. Sydney held number one with an average wait time of 180 minutes, Langford was number two with 117 minutes, and Victoria was number three at 92 minutes. The data came from MediMap's online clinic wait time index, which has access to wait time information for 70% of all walk-in clinics in Canada. Back in 2019, when that MediMap's data came out, Health Minister Adrian Dix said that about 750,000 British Columbians did not have a family doctor when the NDP took power in 2017. Walk-ins were clearly being used. I wanted to get a better sense of the role walk-ins play in our system. Dr. Damian Kontandriopoulos is a public health policy expert and professor at UVic. This is the discussion Damian and I had about that.
The way primary care is offered in Canada historically rests mostly on business decision made by doctors. If you go way back in time, primary care was, you know, individual doctors providing care like in their own tiny clinic in their basements or going to see patients in their own homes. And this evolved slowly, and a doctor organized to be a couple or a small team and share the cost and open their own clinics. In that kind of setting, they're two main models. One is a group of doctors decide that they all have their own patients, but they share an office and they only cater to the needs of patients they know. The other business model is a group of doctors say, well, we'll have a clinic and just put a big neon sign that says walk in, and any person that wants to see a doctor can just walk in and get care. It popped up as something that made sense financially for doctors, and that is a model that people know and rely on.
Mm-hmm. It did end up kind of filling a niche in Canada, though. What was that?
Well, it's the crutch. If you look at the scientific evidence and the best way to provide primary care, it rests on the notion of patient connecting with a group of professionals that they know, and the professionals know the patient, and there is a kind of a long-term relation between the patient and the team, so that it's more efficient, it's higher quality, and so on. The challenge has been in all Canadian provinces, but BC, Quebec are probably harder hits. There aren't enough of those comprehensive clinic that offer long-term connections with patients. And so for people that either can't find a family doctor or don't want a family doctor, the only other option that didn't involve a visit to the hospital is a walk-in. And so over time, more and more people just rely on the fact that you could live without a family doctor, since there was an option. Just go to the walk-in. However, I would say, for having spent most of my life in Quebec, the BC was different from at least Ontario and Quebec in the extent of its reliance on the walk-in model. Walk-ins were everywhere and were easy to access. That's not true in Quebec, for example. Walk-ins have, it's like dinosaurs. Like, everyone know they existed once upon a time, but to actually find a walk-in you can walk in and get care has been a challenge for years, maybe decades now in Quebec, and BC is getting there.
Okay, but there are some positives to having walk-in clinics around. They kind of can act as a place to go for people who are perhaps on a waiting list for a family doctor who have recently moved to the area. So is it good that communities do have them? Like, is Quebec at a fault almost for not having lots of access to walk-in clinics?
I think you said the magic word, access. The strength, and really the thing that walk-in do better than any other model, is providing good accessibility to care. You feel sick one morning, you just go to your neighborhood walk-in clinic and see a professional. That was the essence of the deal. And this is crucially important, the capacity for people to get care in a timely way, in an easy to access way, not too far from their home, and so on. So this is really important, and no other model does it as good, as well as the walk-in. However, it comes at a cost. If you go to walk-in, you're likely to see a different doctor every time. The doctor is not going to know you. This is low in another dimension that is important, which is continuity. And also, walk-in usually do not provide very sophisticated care. So if what you need is kind of a little higher up in the range of complexity, you might find that you don't have that kind of offering in the walk-in.
The clinics do fill a gap, specifically when it comes to healthcare access. But you may have noticed in the past couple of years that access has become more limited. And the answer to why is pretty much what you'd expect.
So the supply has been continuously increasingly restricted. The trend existed before COVID, but to a lesser extent. Thing is, as I said, walk-ins are a business model. And the number of physicians who are interested to work in that business model was mostly going down for a bunch of reasons. But one of the things is physicians, newer physicians entering the profession often have professional expectations that are poorly aligned with the walk-in model. And so walk-in clinics had kind of a challenge in attracting a new physician when decided to retire. But then COVID hit, and this really shook the whole primary care system deeply. Very, very rapidly within the pandemic, doctors decided to offer care virtually, which makes sense for a bunch of reasons. It made sense at the time. The challenge is that even when most of the rest of the activity in the society got back to normal, there's still a large chunk of services, primary care services, that are still offered only online. And so many doctors decided to change their practice. They got tired of primary care and moved in niche practice, like physical activity, medicine, Botox, you name it. And some other physician decided to move to purely online model. Like there's a bunch, but TELUS Babylon is a big player, Well Health, Taya Health, and Maple. There's loads of large firms that try to attract doctors so that they can offer a service online and make a profit out of it. And all this took away medical resources from the walk-in model. And what you have is lots of demand. People are still as sick as before. They need to see a doctor. They need to get care. But on the other side, the clinics don't have less and less medical staff to provide services. And what you have is a mismatch between the demand, either growing or at least significant, and the supply, insufficient.
Like I said at the beginning of the show, I have used the online apps for minor things, and I'm sure you or someone you know has experience with them as well. But also, like I said, they do have their limitations. There are instances where you can't get prescriptions without seeing a doctor in person, or a doctor will not make any diagnosis without seeing you in person. So I asked Damien at what point these apps become not so useful.
Yeah, that's an excellent question for which no one has the perfect answer yet. It went so fast. The transformation virtual care delivery was so fast that everyone is still trying to figure out the boundaries. But it's pretty obvious that there are some health issues for which virtual doesn't cut it, either because patient need a physical exam, either because it's very hard for the doctor to see on a screen what's going on, or either because it's a kind of problem for which, again, a history of knowing the patient, knowing the doctor is important. For all those reasons, imagine that, I would say a number randomly, imagine half of your doctors are only providing care online. Well, all of those can only treat the problems for which you do not need to see the patients. But the patients are not aware whether or not they would need a physical exam. So they will go online and for a bunch of visits, the recommendation of the physician is going to be, well, you need to see someone in person. However, since the supply is not there, you'll see that this will create a tremendous amount of pressure on the remaining walk-ins. I know doctors in James Bay, urgent and primary care clinic, UPCC, doctors were complaining that a big part of the visit they had every day were patients that had seen someone online and that were referred to go to the UPCC. And that increase in the workload of doctors still providing in-person services is just feeding the loop. Doctors are overworked. They're not happy with their working condition. And so they might move to some other form of practice, thus lowering even more the supply of in-person visit. There is a very real challenge in quality. A patient that sees a doctor online, there's always the risk that the doctor will just go for, well, I'm almost sure that this issue is what I have in mind and I can treat online. The thing is, what for the tiny proportion of times where actually it's not that simple situation, and that having an in-person visit would have made a difference, because again, a physical exam sometimes can help find issues that just you can't see online. And so again, lots of anecdotes of people that have had care online and that afterwards, weeks or months later, realize that the actual cause of their problem has been missed and that the care they received was not appropriate.
So walk-in clinics are becoming more sparse and harder to access. The apps jumping in to fill the gaps have limitations, and family doctors are incredibly hard to find. So I'm sure you're wondering what we're supposed to do. So was I, which is why I asked Damien that question.
That if I knew the answer to that question, it would be fantastic. I don't know. I don't think anyone can say, "Oh, don't worry, you got this covered." What is happening is, I'm not sure we have measured the extent of the devastation COVID brought to the healthcare system at large. It's hospitals are currently a mess. They're bleeding nurses. There are wait lists for lots of stuff. And there have been some talk about this. However, it's not only hospital. COVID also like really had a very deep impact on primary care. That's we're just beginning to realize how bad it is. And the situation is unlikely to improve in the short run. Some provinces have been trying to adopt regulation that limits the possibility for doctors to provide purely online care. Provinces could tighten a little the regulation around big players like, again, TELUS and Maple and others. For example, limiting the way they can bill for whatever kind of visit. You also have lots of duplication. So if a patient sees a physician online and the physician just say, well, it's something complicated, just go see someone else for a real visit, then the province will pay twice. The province will pay the physician for the online visit and will pay another physician for a proper visit. So there's lots of money disappearing in those systems. So provinces could tighten up their regulations so that the models that we're paying for make sense. Provinces should definitely look into trying to see what physician and nurse practitioner want in terms of a business model. If you talk to new family doctors, what they're telling is they want a model where they can focus on good quality care and medicine, what they've been trained for. They're not interested in running a business. They're not interested in having responsibility to manage staff and so on. So provinces like Ontario that did quite a significant effort in trying to have other model like community health centers, publicly funded structures, this also could attract physicians that decided to practice elsewhere and could come back to family medicine. Things like nurse practitioner clinics, so the pilots that have been opened in BC work remarkably well. The government could fund more of those. So there are solutions, but like short-term solution that would provide next week better access to people, I don't see anything.
And we're back to the question on the consumer side of things. If I need non-emergency medical care, what do I do? There's often debate around using ERs and hospitals, so I put that question to Damien.
Anyone who feels they have a health issue that needs attention should see a professional. At the system level, the system should make sure that people have access to structures that are designed for their purposes. So, you know, ER are made for emergency situation, like a bus just ran you over. That's a job for the ER. Strep throat should not be. However, that's a discussion for system level. If you're a patient and you're sick, try to get the care you can. If you can see a doctor or a nurse practitioner in an actual clinic somewhere, go for it. If it's a walk-in, go for it. If there's no such option, try online. If online doesn't cut it, go to the ER. But it's not the citizen's responsibility to adjust the kind of care they look for because the system is disorganized.
And Damien also explained his concerns with the lack of action on the issue.
We're running from crisis to crisis, so between heat domes and flood and fires and COVID. And what we're seeing is that the government is like just running after its tail. The healthcare system currently is left degrading day after day at every level, from the walk-in clinics to the medical clinic in your neighborhood to the hospital. It's everywhere. And it's really concerning. So I think your topic makes lots of sense. I would really like to hear our health minister say something about, you know, we are aware it's not going in the right direction and we have kind of a plan. We plan to do something. Instead, I'm hearing crickets and I'm seeing large contracts going to a player like TELUS for all kind of stuff. What's the future? We're going to have a minister of health and TELUS? It's really concerning. I would be expecting more from the government. When you look at healthcare expenditure, it's a huge chunk of the government budget, and it's actually over a tenth of our economy. In BC and Canada in general, more than $1 out of 10 in the whole economy goes into healthcare. So it's kind of big business, and I do not accept, as a citizen and as a researcher, I do not accept that we have no plan, we'll figure it out one day. That just, it doesn't cut it.
Are you concerned then that third-party companies that are just looking to make money are coming into our system, seeing the vulnerabilities and thinking, wow, I can come in and profit off of this?
Totally. And those guys, they have a plan. They do have a plan. And it's a well-integrated plan that will grant them a huge power. Like, once a significant portion of the care is controlled by a for-profit corporation, they will be in a position to dictate the conditions at which they will work. And governments, like BC government, are going to be stuck to abide by the conditions set by the corporations. And this is scary. It's not a situation where a country like Canada or a province like BC wants to be in. It's past time to make sure that doesn't happen. But they have, let's take TELUS, for example. They own the software that your pharmacist runs to dispense pills. They own the software that your primary care clinic doctor uses to store information about visit and to manage appointments. They own the software that is used to run the online visit model. They are more and more involved in providing remote solutions to provide home care. They are currently developing partnership with health authorities to provide hospital at home, where all kind of video monitoring goes on. They're the one that runs part of the infrastructure for appointment and vaccination in BC. And you see all that kind of information going into the same hands. They have a vision where they're going to be the central players in the provision of care in the next 10 or 20 years. I'm not sure that's what I want to have as a citizen.
Making investments in our healthcare system isn't just about reducing wait times or creating slightly more convenience for people looking to access healthcare. It's also about making sure we don't get hit with more bills down the road, treating illnesses and conditions that could have been prevented or better managed early on. In short, there isn't just a social argument to be made for fixing the issues, there's a financial one. But that's a whole other discussion, and perhaps we'll be able to get to that in a future episode. But for now, if you're interested in learning more about the doctor shortage, then you can go back a few months and check out our previous episodes on that. And if you want to help support Capital Daily's local journalism and connect your business with our engaged and curious Greater Victoria audience of over 50,000, well, you can email our partnerships team at advertising@capitaldaily.ca. And thank you so much for spending some time with us. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a rating and a review and also subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes going forward. We post new shows every Monday to Friday. My name is Jackie Lamport. This is the Capital Daily Podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow.